Welcome to another Story Hour session, boys and girls. It's Uncle Dan's turn now to bring us another exciting story adapted from Holy Scripture, Genesis chapters 13 through 18.
My story today is filled to the brim with adventure. I think we'll call it
The Three Strangers.
Returning from their disastrous sojourn in Egypt, Abram and Sarah again settled at Bethel. And with him was Lot, his nephew.
Well, Uncle Abram, we'll have to admit one thing. Even though our stay in Egypt wasn't too pleasant, yet we returned with more of this world's goods than we had when we went to Egypt.
Yes, Lot. God has blessed us.
One of these days, when I get around to it, I'm going to take an inventory of my herds and flocks and tents to see exactly how much I am worth. It's probably more than I imagine. Thanks to you, Uncle Abram, I'm a wealthy man.
Mm-hmm. Wealth brings with it certain responsibilities and troubles. It has...
Are you referring to the trouble between your servants and herdsmen and mine?
Increased possessions always brings increased troubles.
Well, Uncle Abram, you'll have to admit that our herds and flocks are so large that there isn't enough pasture. We'll have to do something about it. It isn't possible to continue on like this as we are.
Well, just so we don't let strife come between us. However, Lot, you're right. The pasture here isn't large enough for both our herds and flocks.
Well, I'm not going to get rid of any of mine.
No need for either of us to do that. Is not the whole land before us? We'll separate. You take your choice. If you decide to take the land to the left, I'll go to the right. If you want the land to the right, I'll take the left.
You mean I can have my choice?
Yes.
Of all the land?
Of course.
But you... God gave all this land to you.
I'll waive my right to it.
Well, that's very generous of you, Uncle Abram. And I'll talk it over with my wife and let you know.
Uncle Abram's giving you your choice?
That's what he said.
Of all the land?
Uh-huh.
Have you decided what land you're going to choose?
Well, I've been thinking. It seems to me that the Jordan Valley has certain advantages. It's the most fertile land in all Palestine. Reminds me of what the Garden of Eden must have looked like.
And dear, there are great cities in the Jordan Plain, too. Don't forget that advantage.
You like cities?
I think they'd be exciting to live in. So much going on.
You'd be happy if I chose the Jordan Plain?
Will you, Lot?
Well, I'll think about it.
Please, Lot. Oh, I've heard that there are great marketplaces in the cities. People gather there and sell things and talk and get acquainted.
Well, perhaps you're right. Yes, the chance for a profitable traffic in the cities is greater than in the mountains and plains. All right, dear. I'll tell Abram that I chose the entire plain of Jordan.
Oh!
We'll make our permanent home in the city of Sodom. Pleased?
Yes.
I'm surprised that Lot chose the plain of Jordan.
Well, it is a fertile region and very beautiful.
But the wickedness of the cities, Abram. The people are very sinful in the sight of God. Surely Lot wouldn't choose to bring up a family in such surroundings.
Yes, I fear Lot is ignorant of the sinful condition of the cities. Or if he does know, he gave it but little thought.
Are we going to stay here in Bethel?
No. I think we'll move south, to Hebron.
Abram moved to Hebron, pitching his tents under the oaks of Mamre. There he erected an altar to the Lord. In the pure air of those upland plains, with their olive groves and vineyards, their fields of waving grain, and the wide pasture grounds of the encircling hills, he dwelt well content with the simple patriarchal life, and leaving to his nephew Lot the perilous luxury of the Vale of Sodom. The Amorite plain in which Abram now lived was ruled over by three royal brothers, Mamre, Eshcol, and Aner.
I say Abram's a great man. We could use him on our side.
Great. What's so great about him? Just because he teaches a new religion and he's different, Does that make him great?
Well, not only is he a man of great wealth, but he's generous and humble and wise in diplomacy. Now show me any man with all those qualities, and I'll show you a great man.
But we need an ally who is brave and skilled in war.
Well, Abram is.
How do you know? He's never been in a war.
But he has trained all his servants in the art of war, and I'm told he's good at it, too.
Isco, what do you think about our new neighbor?
Well, I'm listening.
Well, I think we should ask him to join our alliance.
It won't do any harm.
Well, I'm in favor of talking to him and seeing at first hand what he's like.
I am greatly honored, Your Majesties, by this visit.
Don't be too flattered, Abram, sir. We have a motive, a selfish motive in coming to see you. We need your help.
What my brother is talking about is a military alliance between us. You see, Abram, sir, this country is filled with violence and oppression. 14 years ago, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, invaded this land and made it tributary to him. Well, several of the princes have recently revolted, and we can expect another invasion by Chedorlaomer and his confederates at any moment.
If and when this invasion comes, we must stand as one. Only by strong alliances can we hope to successfully oppose Chedorlaomer's invasion.
Your Majesties, I will gladly join your alliance. Call upon me for help at any time.
And likewise, Abram, you call on us for help, if and when needed.
So be it.
So be it.
Abram.
Yes, Sarah.
Come out here, please.
In a moment.
You'd better come now.
Oh, all right. What is it?
Someone's coming up the trail. It looks like he's injured.
Yes.
I don't recognize him, do you?
No. Must be a stranger to these parts.
I'd better prepare some hot water and bandages.
No, Sarah. We'll see who he is, what he wants, before we do anything. Greetings, stranger.
Sir.
Stay. Don't run away. Come, stranger, and partake of cool shade and refreshments. I am Abram, and this is my wife, Sarah.
Hello.
Fear not, stranger. Our friendship and the hospitality of our humble abode is at your command. Perhaps my wife can wash your wounds and bandage them.
I'm all right. This isn't my blood, but the blood of a companion.
There are two of you.
I left him along the trail. He died.
Of wounds?
Yes, sir.
Oh, a hunting accident, perhaps.
You'd not heard?
No, I'm afraid I haven't.
Oh, there's been a war. A fierce war between the Elamites and the cities of the plains.
I didn't know.
It started when Chedorlaomer, king of Elam...
Pardon my interruption, but Abram, common decency and courtesy demands that this man be washed and refreshed before we allow him to relate his harrowing experiences.
She's right, sir. We are most anxious to hear of this war after you are refreshed with water and food. Now then, sir, if you care to relate your experiences, we are eager listeners.
It was most terrible, Abram, sir. Chedorlaomer, with four allies, marched into our country to reduce us into submission. Five Canaanite kings joined forces and met Chedorlaomer in the Vale of Siddim. Our army was quickly cut to pieces. Those who were lucky, like myself, escaped to the mountains.
How terrible.
Not only did the enemy completely defeat our army, but they also plundered our cities and took rich spoils and many captives.
We have a nephew in Sodom. Perhaps you know him. His name is Lot.
Lot? Yes, I do know him.
You hesitate. Is there something about Lot you don't want us to know?
Was he taken captive by the Elamites?
Yes, ma'am. Lot and all his household.
Oh, no. Then I'll have to rescue him.
Rescue him from the Elamite army?
Abram, you'll do nothing of the sort. It's too dangerous.
He's my own flesh and blood.
Yes, and if you remember, he's also very selfish, choosing for himself the best land in Canaan. He isn't worth rescuing, Abram. I won't let you take the chance anyway.
I know how you feel, Sarah, but I must seek God's counsel in the matter. and then do what I can to rescue Lot.
But, sir, pardon the intrusion. How can you rescue anyone from the fierce army of the Elamites? Our army was powerless against them. Certainly you don't expect to succeed where an army failed.
With God on my side, I dare face any odds, any man, any army.
Abram, sir, may I accompany you on your rescue mission?
If you wish. Eliezer, call together my 318 trained servants and prepare them for immediate battle.
Men, soldiers, we have joined with Prince Abram to do battle against the forces of Elam. My two brothers and I have joined an alliance with Prince Abram of Hebron. He is supreme commander of this campaign. Prince Abram.
The Elamite forces, who so ruthlessly plunder the cities of the plain, are encamped at Dan, on the northern border of Canaan. It is reasonable to suppose that King Chedorlaomer does not expect to be pursued. So, if we march swiftly, the element of surprise can work for a great advantage toward our victory. Thank you.
You all heard the prince. So be it. Company, attention! Forward! Forward!
Swiftly, almost silently, Abram and his confederates marched into the north. Closer and closer drew this small band of determined men to the camp of the huge Elamite army. Stopping for a brief rest, the three royal brothers discussed the prospects for victory.
Personally, I think Prince Abram is crazy to think that we have a chance to win over the Elam army.
Then why did you come if you're so sure you're marching straight to your death?
Loss of life is more to be desired than loss of honor.
But Prince Abram had a secret weapon, the most powerful and efficient weapon in all the world. Before marching from Hebron, Abram had sought God in prayer.
O Lord, God of creation, my nephew Lot is in serious trouble. He needs help. I pray thee, O God, be with me and give me success as I attempt to rescue Lot from the evil hands of the king of Elam. If it be thy will, O God, assure me that I am doing my duty as I march against.
Here he comes now, Prince Abram.
Oh, it's about time. Eliezer, you got through to the enemy camp.
Yes, Master Abram.
Find out anything?
Why, they're in the midst of reveling, Master. Apparently they're celebrating their victory.
Do you think they suspicion that we've trailed them here?
Oh, no, sir.
Thank you, Eliezer.
I'd alert the men for an immediate attack on the enemy.
Well, Mamre, we will wait until dark to attack.
Yes, sir.
As soon as it's dark, we'll split up. You take your men, go around to the east of the enemy camp. Ask Eskol to take his men to the north, Aina to the west, and I'll take my men to the south. At a given signal, we will attack the enemy.
From different directions? Yes, that will surprise them. Why, they'll think a million men are attacking. Oh, that's very wise, generalship, Prince Abram.
And remember when you attack. Make lots of noise, be vigorous, and God will give us a speedy victory.
The battle that followed was swift and sure. Victory went to Abram and his allies. The king of Elam was slain, and his panic-stricken forces were utterly routed. Lot and his family, with all the other prisoners and their goods, were recovered, and a great booty fell into the hands of the victors. Upon his return to the plain of Jordan, Abram was met by the king of Sodom, who came out with a large retinue to honor the conquerors.
Friends! People of Sodom, quiet, please!
Citizens of Sodom and friends, as king of Sodom, it is my duty and pleasure to welcome Prince Abram and his brave and victorious men. Because of their bravery, back with us are our neighbors and friends, those who were taken prisoners by the Elamites. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts, Prince Abram.
Thank you, good friends of Sodom. The plain facts, Your Majesty, and friends, are these. The rescue of your friends and neighbors was made possible not by me, but by the God of heaven. I am also indebted to the heroic efforts of my three allies, Princes Mamre, Eshcol, and Aner, and the brave soldiers who fought under them.
It is the rule of war that the victor shall take the spoils. Prince Abram and his men rescued every prisoner taken from our midst. In doing so, he came in possession of much rich booty. These things belong to Prince Abram. They are all his by right of conquest. Yet, Prince Abram, I beg of you, allow the rescued prisoners to return to their homes.
Your Majesty, I undertook the rescue of the prisoners from the Elam forces, not for purpose of gain. I want nothing. I wish only that my confederates receive the portion of the booty to which they are justly entitled. The rest of the loot belongs to you, and the rescued prisoners are free from any obligation to me.
Abram returned to his tents and his flocks, weary but happy. But during the days that followed, he began to show signs of growing concern.
You're hard to understand sometimes, Abram. Here you are, a hero and a man of renown and influence among the surrounding nations, and yet something seems to be troubling you.
Oh, Sarah, I am troubled. Years ago, God promised to make me the father of a great nation. But we have no children, Sarah. And now, we're too old to have a son and heir.
A child of our own? It's impossible, Abram.
But God gave me a dream. In the dream, I was led outdoors and told to look up at the stars. So shall thy seed be, promised the voice of God. I begged God for some visible evidence that this promise would be fulfilled. In the dream, I was told to make the usual sacrifices customary among men in the ratification of solemn agreements. Making the sacrifices and performing my portion of the vow, I waited for God to perform his part. And then, just as the sun went down, a great darkness fell upon me, and I heard a voice.
Abram, friend of God, you are not to expect immediate fulfillment of the promised seed, or immediate possession of the promised land. Thy people shall suffer long and much before they are established in Canaan. Later to thy seed shall be born the Redeemer of the world, the Son of God. He shall become a sacrifice, thus redeeming penitent man from sin. The Son of God shall later come in all his glory. He shall restore the earth to its Edenic beauty. And then and only then shall come the final and complete fulfillment of the promise that thy seed shall inherit the earth.
When Abraham had been nearly 25 years in Canaan, God conferred great honor upon him. Angels of heaven walked and talked with him as friend with friend. And when Abram was 99 years old, the Lord changed his name to Abraham, telling him he would be a father of many nations. One hot summer noontide, Abraham and Sarah were sitting in the shade of their tent door, looking out over the quiet landscape, when they saw in the distance three travelers approaching.
I wonder who they are, Abraham.
From this distance, it's hard to tell.
Probably strangers.
They are dressed like the people of this country.
But look, they stop and talk among themselves as if trying to decide which way to go.
I'll go and see if I can help them.
You'd better hurry, Abraham. They're already turning about and going in another direction.
Greetings, gentlemen.
Greetings, sir.
I pray these strangers, come to my humble tent and tarry, and rest a while, and I will prepare refreshments for thy entertainment.
As you say, sir.
With his own hands, Abraham brought water to the three tired wayfarers that they might wash the dust from their feet. He himself selected their food, and while they were at rest under the cooling shade, an entertainment was made ready, and he stood respectfully beside them while they partook of his hospitality.
Where is Sarah, thy wife, Abraham?
She is in the tent.
The Lord will do unto thee as he has promised, and lo, Sarah shall have a son.
Have a child? Me? It's my age.
Abraham, why does Sarah, thy wife, laugh?
She is old, sir, and she doesn't believe that she can bear me a son.
Is anything too hard for the Lord to do?
Is anything too hard? Are you the Lord, my God?
Sarah shall have a son.
And the three strangers rose up from thence and looked toward Sodom. And Abraham went with them part of the way. And one of them said unto Abraham,
Shall the Lord God hide from you, Abraham, the thing that he is about to do? Abraham, we are on our way now to the city of Sodom.
You're going to Sodom? That's where my nephew Lot lives.
The cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great before the Lord, and their sin is very grievous. We go down now to see if what they have done is altogether according to the cry of it.
Now two of these heavenly messengers turn and start in the direction of the wicked city of Sodom. The third one remains with Abraham. By this time, Abraham was certain that he was the Son of God. And Abraham said,
O Lord, wilt thou destroy the righteous of Sodom along with the wicked? If there are 50 righteous people within the city, wilt thou save Sodom from destruction because of them?
And the Lord answered, If I find in Sodom 50 righteous, then I will spare all the place for their sake.
O Lord, if there lack 5 of the 50, wilt thou destroy the city for lack of 5?
And the Lord answered, If I find there 45, I will not destroy it.
If there are 40 found there, will you destroy Sodom?
I will not destroy Sodom for 40's sake.
Let not the Lord be angry, and I will yet speak. Peradventure there shall be found only 30 righteous in the city.
And the Lord answered, I will not do it if I find 30 there.
If there are only 20...
I will not destroy it for 20's sake.
Oh, my Lord, be not angry with me, and I will make only one more request. Supposing there be only 10 righteous.
Again the Lord said, I will not destroy it for the sake of 10. As soon as the Lord finished communing with Abraham, he went his way, and Abraham returned unto his tent.
Abraham, were those really angels?
Sarah, two of them were angels, yes, but the third, he was the Lord himself, the Son of God.
The Son of God? The Creator?
The Creator of all things, Sarah. Also the same Son of God who one day shall redeem man from sin.
The Son of God. Here.
And I thought he was merely a tired wayfarer. Oh,
and what did the Son of God want with you?
The three of them were on their way to Sodom to see if the people are actually as sinful as they appear. If so, God is going to destroy Sodom. I mean, he was going to, but now he may not.
The last time I saw Lot's wife, she told me that the people are so vile and wicked, it's impossible to describe them.
In a city the size of Sodom, surely there are four or five others beside Lot and his family who worship the true God.
I doubt it, Abraham. I don't understand why the Lord and the two angels came by just to tell you they were going to destroy Sodom. Why tell you?
God always warns his people of what he is about to do. He warned Noah of the flood. He warned Adam of the consequences of sin. Always, throughout all the history of the world, God will warn his people of what is about to take place.
Would they have warned you about Sodom if you hadn't hastened to them and extended your hospitality?
I doubt it, Sarah.
Always, then, we should entertain strangers. They may be angels.
Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares.